You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Well, I'm thrilled to introduce my next guest to listeners. He's a Tibetan member of parliament. So yes, you've heard that right, a member of parliament from Tibet, and he's here visiting in New Zealand. It's the Honourable Tenzin Doring. As I say, a Tibetan MP. He's actually based in Australia, and we'll explain a little bit of that. But Tenzin, if I might, welcome to the show and welcome to New Zealand.
Oh, thank you so much. And Tasi Delek to you, Honourable former MP.
Tasi Delek as well. My Tibetan is... That's about all the Tibetan I can say. So I always get embarrassed when I turn up to various events. So that's the limit of my language. But hey, welcome to New Zealand. Is this your first visit here, or have you been visiting before?
As far as New Zealand is concerned, this is my first ever visit to the country.
Well, look, welcome. It's wonderful to have you here. We'll certainly get to why you're in New Zealand, but might as well introduce yourself, so to speak. I mean, who is the Honourable Tenzin Doring? I mean, obviously Tibetan, but living in Australia. Tell us a bit about your story.
Right. My name is Tenzin Doring, and I was born in Tibet, the Tibetan capital city called Lhasa, which currently is the capital of Tibetan Autonomous Region, which considers to be independent Tibet's capital as well before China's invasion. At the age of four, I was told and there was an incident of my father participating in the political activism and freedom of expression in the 80s. And then he was detained, and soon after his release, he passed away. So at that time, I was just 4 years old. But at the age of nine, my mother sent me to India as a Tibetan refugee due to the circumstances surrounding the family. And from 1994 to 2018, I was in India as a refugee. I studied in India. I grew up in India for the most part of my youth life. I came to Australia under the migration program in 2018 with my wife and kid. Since then, I have been settled in India, Australia, in Brisbane, the capital city of Queensland. Before which, I have participated in various political activities and association activities. So when I was settled in Australia, soon after 2 years, there was an election to the Tibetan 17th Parliament, and I was part of the participation and candidate, and finally won the election to represent the Tibetans in New Zealand and Australia.
It is fantastic, and I see from your bio you have a master's in philosophy, and why I raise that is I have a master's in philosophy too, so there we go.
Yes, it's a Master of Philosophy and Master of Political Science as well. Yeah. It was an interesting coincidence.
It is. We very similar. I'm going to have to ask you, what did you study? What was your thesis in?
That was done back in India in Madras Christian College, where I lived for 6 years to study. And my thesis was militarization and nuclearization of Tibetan autonomous region, or Tibetan plateau.
Well,
that was
that'll
like
be even
many years back.
That's been it's the same for me. I think I had brown hair when I did my master's. That was many, many years ago. Actually, that whole militarization and nuclearization will be of interest to New Zealanders because we are very proud nuclear free. Do you mind if I that's jumping a topic, but has actually the People's Republic of China got nuclear weapons on Tibetan soil now? Is that something that's known?
Exactly. Yesterday morning, I was speaking at the APEC forum, where I touched up briefly on the topic of nuclearization of Tibet. In the early 90s, when Mao Zedong, or the chairperson of China at that time, invaded Tibet, the two of the reasons which formed the location of Tibet as a perfect for the nuclear development. And in the 70s and 80s, they started developing the nuclear hydrogen bombs because of the availability of uranium in Tibet, which is quite in abundance. So yes, in the 90s, it was huge topic for the Tibetans to talk about nuclearization and dumping of nuclear waste in the Tibetan region called Qinghai. We have something called province of Qinghai, where they have produced kind of a hydrogen bomb by the use of uranium. And then every nuclear waste goes into the Kukuno Lake, which is called Songombo, which is in the province of His Holiness the Dalai Lama's birthplace. So they closed it. It's called the Ninth Academy because it comes under the Ninth Bureau of China's administration. So it was later closed because first they have conducted it very secretively somehow in one or the other way. They could not keep it secret for any longer. So the Tibetan researchers and researchers around the world have taken interest, a lot of interest on the nuclearization of Tibetan Plateau because of the location. So it was later closed and moved somewhere else. But around that time in the 90s, a lot of Tibetans have suffered from unimaginable and new diseases that they were never introduced to in their previous lifetime, in decades and centuries in the history of Tibet. So which was the result of the consequences and the result of the production of nuclear weapons and its waste into the rivers and lake systems.
Gosh. I have to say, and I have to admit, Tenzing, I was completely ignorant of that. So the high amount of uranium deposits, the dumping, obviously the health costs. Gosh, Tibet's been through enough as it is without all of that added on. So tell us about becoming a member of parliament. I mean, that in itself is, I think, something worthy. I'm biased. I used to be an MP, but how does it work for Tibet? Because we know it's the government in exile. The Chinese Communist Party have taken over Tibet and runs it, as you say, an autonomous region. So how does your parliament work? Where's it based? How many of them are you? Are you of them? There we go. Get my English right.
Right. Interesting. It is very interesting. A lot of leaders and the experts that we have met over the 1 week visit to Australia and New Zealand, they have been very interested in knowing about the Tibetan Parliament. In fact, the ambassador for New Zealand from Taiwan, the representative of Taiwan in Wellington, she was also asking a similar question during that meeting. So yes, the current Tibetan Parliament is the 17th house. Since the parliament was commissioned or established in India by His Holiness the Dalai Lama in 1960. The one thing is very clear that it is the continuation of the government of independent Tibet, but before China arrived, we don't have a parliament because the democracy was not introduced inside Tibet at that time. However, soon after His Holiness arrived in India, he had opened the political process and the political system to a democracy system, which means that parliament forms a major part of it. So we have 45 members of parliament. Interestingly, 10 members each forms the province representations from the province of Tibet, called the Amdo, Yuzhang, and Kham. Traditionally, these are the collective three provinces that forms the bigger Tibet, the larger Tibet, the real Tibet. Against the China's interpretation of Tibet limiting to the Tibetan autonomous region. So for us, Tibet means Amdo, Yuzhang, Kham. So all these three provinces sends 10 representatives each to the parliament, making it 30. And then we have 10 members of parliament representing the Tibetan Buddhist sect, and the Bon religion. Bon religion is a religion that was in Tibet before Buddhism was introduced. So we have 10 representatives from Bon religion. It is more or less like an animalistic religion. And then from Buddhists, we have four sects, Nyingma, Saitya, Kagyu, Gelug. His Holiness is from Gelugpa sect, even though he is the head of the all sects. So two each from those four sects forms 8 plus 2 from Burn religion. It forms 10 members of parliament from the religious sect. But it is not necessary that only monks can contest the election. Even the lay person who have these faiths in different sects can also contest election.
I was going to ask that. I was thinking, oh, does that have to be monks and nuns? But it can be lay people as well.
Yes, it can be lay people as well. And from the provincial representations that comes 10 is from different three different provinces, even the monks can contest through that electorate as well. So it's a mix of it. That makes it 30 plus 10 from religious sect makes it 40. And then we have five members of parliament that neither represents the religion, that nor represents the provinces of Tibet, but represents the Tibetans in abroad, in foreign countries. Like, we have two members of parliament representing North and South America, the whole contour of the continents. Then we have two members of parliament representing the whole of Europe and Africa.
They're going to be really busy. That's a big area.
Yeah. And then, surprisingly, you will hear about my representation. The one seat that was for me currently, which I represent, under my constituency comes New Zealand, Australia, Russia, Taiwan, Japan, and all those oceanic countries that forms under Taiwan space and Australia and New Zealand area. You can also say PNG, Tonga, Samoa, Fiji. We don't have Tibetans there, but still, I do have to represent them. So it's a multinational constituency for the five of the Tibetan parliament members. The remaining 40 members of the parliament, which comes through the representations of province and Buddhist sect, they represents India, Tibet, Bhutan.
Gosh, look, as someone who has supported Tibet, I've even facilitated visits. I've had your Sikyong visit. I didn't have a full or a deep appreciation of the structure. So you have a huge constituency. I assume as you try to deal with Tibetans, you won't be able to travel all the time to all those countries. So is a lot of your work online? You meet with them virtually and hear what their issues are? Is that how it operates for you as a member of parliament?
Absolutely. In fact, I have been traveling within Australia for many times, over 3 years of my term so far. It was quite easy within Australia. That, as I said, this is my first visit to New Zealand because the parliament from our office, which is based in India, in Dharamsala, which is also the residence of His Holiness the Dalai Lama and the headquarters of the whole Tibetan government in exile, including the executive, judiciary, and legislature. They will make an outline as to who and what kind of delegation will visit which countries. So this time, the first delegation visited the foreign country is Australia and New Zealand. And since I am one of the members of the parliament that represent on the region, so they included me as well in the delegation. So this is my first visit that was conducted on officially from the Tibetan parliament in exile. I have the plans to over the next year as well to visit Taiwan and Japan, which I haven't been able to visit in the last 3 years.
Amazing. So as someone who represented a very small area of Auckland, I find it remarkable just how large the area you have to cover. Though I suppose, to be fair, like New Zealand, give listeners an idea of how many Tibetans are in New Zealand, where it's not a huge population, is it?
As I have heard from the Tibetan representative in Canberra, which also represents New Zealand, we have Tibetans in Auckland. There is a community as well. And I hear that your community is closely associated with Honorable Simon as well, and the Friends of Tibet also. So in Wellington, they don't have any Tibetans. I have checked around. Unfortunately, but fortunately, we do have a very limited number of Tibetans, around 100 or 140. That's what I hear from the representative, but very, very strong and cohesive community there in Auckland. I think the president, one of the former presidents of the community was from my college back in India, Wang Disidi.
You have a wonderful community here in Auckland, very small. They are always telling me that they're very small, but they're very proud. And so recently we were celebrating His Holiness's, the Dalai Lama's birthday. And two things stand out for me, other than obviously the beautiful silks and music, but Tibetans love their food. There was so much food. And this tea at the start that was very fatty and sweet. As you know, they love their food. It was a wonderful celebration.
Thank you. Yes, they do offer a lot.
So just quickly, before we move into some of the key issues you see for Tibet and Tibetans around the world, As a member of parliament, do you have to travel to Dharamsala in India quite often, or do you as a parliament meet virtually?
Yes, we do have to travel to Dharamsala twice a year for the parliament session. The beginning with once we get elected, we have to travel to Dharamsala to take an oath as per the charter or the working constitution in exile. And then after that, the very first session of the Tibetan parliament is to elect the ministers that nominated by the president, because the president also is elected around the same time. So we take oath around the same time. And the president will have to bring list of ministerial nominees before the first parliament session itself is concluded. So in 3 days, we have to elect the ministers and all these things happen. So, and after that, annually, we have two sessions. The first session is called budget session, which happens mostly in March, in any day between March. And the second session is called functional reporting or the departmental reporting, which means that there is no budget session, but there is a session to hold accountable of the minister, the president and his ministers, department activities and their annual report. So the March session is mostly budget in the sense that they will talk about how much they have collected the revenue and how much is going to be the expenditure in the financial year. And the Tibetan financial year is like April 1st to the next year, March 31.
Gosh. So you run quite a different system to New Zealand, because New Zealand's parliament, and I hope you got to meet some New Zealand MPs, but the parliament here is almost always sitting, not every week, but yours is a more traditional model like we see in the United States and other places, where actually the parliament sits for one or two times a year, a good amount of time, but then you can get back into life. So, I mean, Tenzing, what drew you into politics? You've got degrees, you've got a family, you've got options, yet you chose politics. So why become a member of parliament?
Well, that's a very interesting question to me personally. Ever since I was in school, I have taken a lot of interest in the civics subject at the school level. And when I was in year 12, I have taken a particular interest in the political science. There was an occasion when I bunk other classes and just go to the library and study American politics, Australian politics, Indian politics and the governance system. So it was purely, I think, out of passion, pure passion and interest. And additionally, having a history of persecution by Chinese government, where my father was a political prisoner, my grandfather was a political prisoner. So there was this feeling of fighting for freedom against the authoritarian system. And that really drove me towards studying politics.
Which, it's sad there is persecution. It's sad what's continuing to happen. But it's obviously bringing good people to the fore, people like yourself. So what are then some of the issues? What are some of the big issues for the Tibetan parliament? And what do you see as some of the big issues for Tibetans in New Zealand and Australia at the moment?
Well, the general issue is, of course, fighting for our freedom from China through different means of, but the fundamental activity still remains non-violent and peaceful. This is the fundamental basis of our own freedom struggle, at the same time seeking support from any entity, whether it is a political entity or a non-governmental entity. So as far as Australia and New Zealand is concerned, as we met the members of parliament, we have been pushing them for taking a stand on the Tibet issue, particularly with regard to the historical status of Tibet as an independent and not part of China, which China will definitely propagate all the time. And then also we have requested them and the members of the public in both New Zealand and Australia to talk about the Dalai Lama, you know, His Holiness. China has already started taking over the Buddhist institutions in Tibet. They have already interfered in the Buddhist process of recognizing the reincarnation process. So they also have started conducting the similar with His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. So we have told the leaders and the public that not to recognize any future Dalai Lama recognized by the Chinese authorities. but to give recognition to the one Tibetans have, Tibetan communities or Tibetan government in exile, or His Holiness himself has recognized it, since it is the autonomous activity and process of the Tibetan Buddhist tradition and not of a communist tradition.
And that's a really critical point, isn't it? For the Tibetan people, choosing the Dalai Lama is deeply personal, religious,
yes,
and political. Exactly. And yeah, and obviously the Chinese Communist Party is very, very keen to control that. So it's something that New Zealanders need to keep in mind when there is a transition. So, I mean, just give New Zealanders a little bit of an idea of what it's like to live in Tibet for Tibetans these days, because under the CCP, it's not easy, is it, to express your language, your culture, your religion?
Yeah, it's quite horrible to talk about, but I must, as it's required to talk about in order to gain support from other people. The most important thing is that whatever is happening inside Tibet, either it's in the Qinghai province or Sichuan province or the Tibetan Autonomous Region as marked by the Chinese government, the information flow outside Tibet is highly impossible. Any information with regard to the happenings inside Tibet that goes outside Tibet can be treated as breach of state secret law, breach of separatism law. For example, ever since Xi Jinping took over the presidency of China, before which he was also the party secretary general, the 157 Tibetan self-immolations occurred, most of them during his presidency. The Tibetans who have burned themselves, calling for more freedom, calling for the return of His Holiness the Dalai Lama back to Tibet. It happened in all parts of Tibet, regardless of where they are. It happened in Sichuan province, it happened in Qinghai province, it happened in the Tibetan Autonomous Region, even though the first began in 2009 before Xi Jinping took over, but 90% of them have happened during President Xi Jinping's rule. And as he tried to occupy every space of the authorities inside China, similar goes for the Tibetan Autonomous Region, similar goes to the Sichuan and Qinghai where the Tibetans inhabit. The interference in the Tibetan Buddhist institution, the interference in the family household, these days, it is extremely hard to express freedom of expression inside Tibet, because if you undertake any of those activities, your family will also be punished. They call it collective punishment. So you don't do it because of the fear that somebody from your family will also suffer along. And if you are a member of the Communist Party or working in a government, your children will not be allowed to go to the Tibetan temples and the monasteries to study or to just have an audience of the scriptures. So these are the religious restrictions that they have put on. And of course, the colonial boarding school is the most alarming at this time, because they are taking children as young as 6 years old away from their home and to the colonial Chinese boarding schools to sinicize them completely in a different environment. If the children is raised in that colonial school, after 10 to 12 years, when children comes back from that colonial school, he will not be able to identify himself as a Tibetan. At the same time, we have these Tibetan language schools getting closed. Every month we have reports of them. And then monastic schools getting closed, or in one or the other reason, like under the pretext of health and safety, they have been closing and targeting those. So because the Tibetan culture, Tibetan religion, and Tibetan language are closely tied with our own identity, this is the best attack on the Tibetans to synthesize in a way that the Communist government wanted.
I just find it deeply sad, and I'm obviously miles away and I'm not Tibetan. So it's, as you said at the start, deeply personal and painful to someone like yourself in the Tibetan community. But Tenzin, thank you for sharing it, because I think it's important that listeners and New Zealanders understand what's happening. Because as you said at the start, the Chinese government's very keen to make sure that this information doesn't get out, but they're basically trying to suppress your culture. So yes, suppress religion, suppress language, suppress the family to to change Tibet. And so I think for me, you give great hope that not only are there Tibetans speaking out, but actually, as you are doing, you have a parliament, you have a president, you've got your Dalai Lama, you celebrate your culture. And now you're here in New Zealand. So what has brought you here to New Zealand at the moment? There's a conference on or something, isn't there?
Right. There are several activities put together. The first one is, as you said, there is a conference called EPIC Forum, which talks about the geopolitics and geostrategies and how it is impacting the global geopolitical strategies. So I have seen the members of parliament from Fiji, honorable members from New Zealand, and the ambassador from Taiwan, and other speakers as well. And the Paula Hansen from Australia also spoke via conference, video conference.
Well, you had Pauline there. Well, you wouldn't go to sleep wondering what Pauline thinks of issues, would you?
Yes. I had the occasion to raise questions. It was quite a surprise to me because I didn't expect she would be there in the going to be part of the conference. And then that conference, I spoke about the geopolitical significance of Tibet, how Tibet's China's invasion of Tibet and occupation of this particular landmark that is at the higher plateau called Third Pole has impacted the geopolitics of other countries. And then we have this lobby to the Tibetan members of Parliament of New Zealand at the political level, expressing them the concerns that we had as far as the Dalai Lama's reincarnation is concerned, as far as the Tibetan cultural, social, and educational rights are concerned. That ultimately comes to the political rights and then the Jinan autonomy that we are fighting for through the Middle Way policy, not only to benefit Tibetans and Tibetan political rights, but also to benefit the Chinese mainlanders. And these two forms one or two of the part. And then we also, back in Australia, we also similarly met with the politicians and the members of the Friends of Tibetan Parliamentary Group in Australia. We met members of the parliaments in the state of Victoria in Australia. So it was a six-day-long, hectic lobby movement for us.
Did you get to the New Zealand Parliament? Were you able to meet some MPs there?
Yeah, we did. We did the day before yesterday.
Good.
We were able to speak to, I think, pretty much seven members of Parliament and some staff members, and two of the honourable members who hosted us. We had nearly 1.5 to 2 hours of discussion with the honourable members, and they raised pertinent questions. They raised very important questions, perhaps sometimes a quite difficult one, and but it was a very engaging and deep discussion.
I am thrilled and relieved to hear that. In this sort of busy political life in New Zealand, as for you, it's easy for some issues to get forgotten. And you know, one of the reasons, amongst many, to have you on is to remind New Zealanders of Tibet and what is happening. And as you've said, Tenzing, that it's a geopolitically important area, and that's not taking away from what's happening to the Tibetan people, but China's interest in it is because it's got a geopolitical reach.
That one,
I am so incredibly grateful that with all the busyness of your trip here, you've made some time to come and speak to me and listeners here at RCR. And can I just wish you well in your role as a member of Parliament, and thank you for the advocacy you're bringing on behalf of the Tibetans here in New Zealand.
Thank you so much for having me here with you. I'm sure that through your podcast, a lot of people will get informed about Tibet, and I must express my gratitude not only on behalf of the Tibetan Parliament members here, but also on behalf of the whole 6 million Tibetans who cannot really express their views due to the restrictions there.
Well, thank you for that voice. Thank you for coming on to the radio. This is one of the big things I try to do, Tenzing, is just to have these conversations. And you mentioned a few people. We've had Pauline Hansen on the show. We've had Joanne Oh. She's our Taiwanese representative. And now we've had your voice. So again, thank you so much. Again, welcome to New Zealand and safe travels back to Australia.
Thank you so much. You will have a great day and health and happiness over the years to come.
So everyone, that was the Honourable Tenzing Doring. He's a Member of Parliament, of part of the Tibetan Government in Exile.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.